give everybody an overview on exactly what you're doing so we can understand and hear about some of your ideals and inventions?
Well, right now we're in the course of doing some experiments building what we're calling the cosmic induction generator.
Okay.
So it involves a lot of tuning and resonance checking and curve drawing and all that to figure out how to get these things to operate optimally. So the two purposes are, one is the field of induction is when it's called the induction generator. The other is the telluric transmitter, where one transformer communicates to the other through the earth.
Okay, very interesting. So for people who may not get technical, can you get a little bit more detailed in exactly what an induction motor would do?
Well, it's not an induction motor. It's they call it an induction generator. It's usually an industrial device for producing a large radio frequency field for heating things up or welding or some type of purpose where the electric field heats up the material. So in this case, we're using a pair of Tesla transformers that allow for a much higher dielectric field density than has ever been possible before.
Hi, Eric.
Okay, well, I can hear somebody now.
Yeah, I've got a fork.
I am back. It's Matt McMahon, host of Inventing a Free World. Sorry about those technical delays. It happens sometimes. The listeners that had to wait to, you know, because of the technical difficulties, I do apologize. Welcome to Inventing a Free World on Dark City Radio. I did also want to mention to people that I am taking a break from the radio for a little bit. I might come back. I might not. I just have had to put off a lot of my own inventing aside because of the, you know, the amount of hours that's required from promoting shows and doing things like that. So, I'd like to welcome everybody. Eric's all aired. How are you doing, Eric?
Well, my brain's a little fogged out now. We've been working on this Tesla transformer thing all day, trying to get it tuned up And now, just right when this show started, my heater took a crap. So now I got to figure out what's wrong with that. So it's another dismal afternoon. So I'm kind of feeling like that right now.
Oh well, that's not good. It doesn't put you in the best of moods. But hopefully, talking about what you love the most will help change that.
Yeah.
So I guess as a first topic. I've looked into it, haven't done much in-depth. I've heard on some of your videos you talk about a term, but before I ask about that term, I'd like to ask you, have you heard of direct seeds?
Yeah.
Would you be able to, like, out of all the people that I've ever talked to, I think that you should be the one to be able to explain direct seed more than most. So would you be able to explain what that is?
Well, it's kind of out of my field because it's an electronic term, but I know that from the Farnsworth fuser tubes is that the Dirac C was a source of electrons. The Farnsworth fuser tubes created more electrons out of an empty space than were going into it. So there's a certain equation that defines that in any space, the number of electrons entering it equals the number of electrons that are leaving it, which is a commonsensical thing. But of course, if you put a cathode in there, then there's going to be more electrons leaving than there are entering. Farnsworth was able to create a virtual cathode where a empty vacuous space with a slight plasma in it was capable of drawing electrons out of the Dirac C and producing a greater amount of electrons leaving the volume of space than entered it, and there was no physical origin for the electrons. There was no cathode. There was nothing there. There wasn't enough ionization in the gas to account for the electrons. He said they came from the Dirac C.
So, in a sense, Dirac C would be an actual terminology of what Tesla may have called ether, would it not?
No, there's no way. You can't really make comparisons in that way.
No? Okay. But in a sense, ether and Dirac C are sources of free energy, are they not?
Well, I mean, these are all speculative things that are not defined. So the ether itself is not defined. Electrons don't necessarily represent energy, but if they're in motion, there's an energy involved with them. They allegedly represent mass, which is not really a proper concept. So all these things are coming from nowhere. That's something to think about. I tend to use, rather than the word ether, which is a physical thing, I use the term counter space.
Counter space. Not like in
there's another now. There's another type of space.
Okay.
So counter space is best defined as the space between the lines on a ruler.
Okay,
so the smaller it is, the smaller the counter space is, the more of it you have. Unlike conventional space, where the larger volume is the larger space, in counter space it's reversed.
Okay.
So basically, capacitors operate on that type of principle, and that the closer the plates get together, the more energy that the volume between the plates can store the electricity. So the smaller the volume in space, the larger the counter volume in counter space, and hence the dielectric field concentrates into counter space. So electrons are a direct physical interpretation of dielectric lines of force, so then they would also correspond to a counterspatial relationship. So this Dirac C would be some kind of counterspatial source of the electrical activity.
Okay, and would you say in the present science terms that that in terms of you know, actual energy, do you think that they've got a lot of holes in the present science?
I think I got what you said. Could you repeat that one more time?
In terms of like electrons, protons, neutrons, and energy, do you think that in regards to the present science indoctrination, as I like to call it, that there are far too many holes in their own science?
Oh, yeah, it's essentially worthless. It's not even science. It's better termed as a religion.
Yeah, but I like to use that term as well. You know.
Yeah, it's a name that was coined for it. It was called scientism.
it's not
and,
laws,
and,
it's rules of
and, and Heaviside, Heaviside called them scienticulists.
I guess the next question that I wanted to ask you, Eric, I hear you talking about another term that I have found prior to seeing your work, because I'm always trying to look in science where they've validated, you know, anomalies or, you know, basically sources that can explain, sources of knowledge that can explain free energy. So, one of those terms you used quite frequently in the interview that you did for your crowdsourcing campaign, and that's toleric currents. Can you explain what toleric currents are?
That's the electricity that flows on the inside of the Earth.
Okay. So that would be, would that be like a, to define it, would that be like a negative energy or both, or positive energy?
Well, it's basically, you know, it's an electric current. Where it derives its energy from is questionable. We don't know.
Okay.
What even gives rise to these currents is not understood. But nevertheless, these currents exist, and they often exist in the form of impulses and radio frequency oscillations.
Okay. I am an inventor. I don't know if I mentioned this to you before. And being an inventor allows me to be very observant, especially with weird occurrences. And last winter, or maybe the winter before, I would enjoy going for a walk on the bike path. And unfortunately, they put the hydro transmission lines above the bike path. And it was in the wintertime, the ground was covered in ice on the asphalt ground. And for some weird reason, the ground was oscillating at 60 hertz. I could hear the frequency coming off of the water and the ice. And that led me to the conclusion that the Earth is forever consuming energy. What do you think about that theory?
No, otherwise that energy would show up as a loss in the transmission line. There's probably something in the ground that was responding to the electrical field out of the line, or it could have actually been a reflection of the sound emitted by the wires. If there's enough magnetic field, the current's really high, the cables will actually hum. So it's kind of hard to tell where it came from, because being that there's a number of phases, what it does is it throws the sound like a ventriloquist does, and you can't really identify where it's coming from. It makes the sound appear at another location, because all the three currents are not in phase. So it projects the sound off into an angle somewhere.
Okay. Normally when I do walk under there when it's summertime, I can hear the actual wires humming, which the sound comes from upward, but at that time it was down.
Somehow the line must have been inducing current in the ground. There could have been a telluric current that followed the lines, the harmonics. It would have been the harmonics. It would have been 180 cycles a second rather than 60. But it's kind of hard to distinguish that, because the waveforms that you usually hear are not sinusoidal anyway.
Okay. You said loss in the transmission line. You said that there would be loss in the transmission line. Did you just say that?
Yeah, that would, if energy was flowing into the earth, that would show up at the sending end of the line, and they'd be looking for where the energy's going. It would not be possible to transmit in that configuration without a loss. So there can't be, the thing can't be delivering energy to the earth, because that would load the generators down.
Now, you do, I because I've always wanted to know questions and answers to my questions, you did know that hydro companies actually do calculate based on distance their loss.
Yeah, that's pretty much understandable from, you know, the leakage of the insulators and the corona around the wires, and the loss of the resistance of the wires. All those things are pretty much standard calculation. You don't have to really do any, you know, theorizing anymore. I have books on the shelf. All that material is readily available.
Okay. So where would you think that if they have losses, do you think that it would be heat, even though they're using, like, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of volts down those lines?
Well, those lines typically operate like at 230,000 volts or 480,000 volts, somewhere around in that range, and the current's usually between 500 and 2,000 amps.
Wow. I didn't know the current was that high on them.
Yeah, the city of Los Angeles has a DC line, a two-conductor DC line. It's center-tapped, so it's positive and negative on each side. The voltage across the line, from line to line, is 1 million volts DC, and the current in the conductors is 1,000 amperes. So that's a 1 billion watt power line.
They're not using alternating current?
No. No, it's better to use direct current.
Oh, okay.
Because then you're not constantly circulating your electric field, so you don't have all those heavy voltages and currents that appear because electric field's having to circulate in the cycle. So all that drops out, so the only loss you're left with are the DC components, which is the resistance of the wires and the leakage of the insulators.
Okay.
There's no more capacitance to worry about. There's no more inductance. All those wave factors go away. There's no more wave propagation on the line. It becomes static.
Okay. So I guess my next question before we get into some of the work that you're doing, do you know why Tesla would have chosen home power to be 50 and 60 hertz? Well, 50 in the UK, 60 in America. Do you know why?
Well, Tesla was insistent on only 60 cycles. Tesla would not like the idea of 50 cycles. Actually, 50 cycles is stupid. But unfortunately, stupid things become standardized, and you're stuck with it. Fortunately, here we have 60, which is what Tesla picked. There's a number of reasons. It used to be the first AC lighting, or the first AC power systems, were used for arc lighting.
Okay.
They're usually about 2,000 or 3,000 volts, because all the arcs were like 50 volts each, and they were all hooked in series. So you didn't want a low frequency, because the arc would sputter and the light would flicker. So the first alternating current frequency was 133 cycles a second.
Oh.
Then with the advent of the Tesla polyphase system, the first applications were usually very large motor generator sets where the AC would be turned back into DC to run the Edison systems that were already established. And railway motors and large motors don't like high frequencies or they spin fast, so the first standardized machine frequency was 25 cycles a second.
Okay.
But the problem with 25 cycles a second is it could not be used for incandescent lighting because the lights would flicker. So the frequency had to go higher. So what Tesla did is there was three things. First of all, 60 is a natural division of the clock face and the rotation of the Earth. Also, a motor for like a washing machine or an appliance or something would turn way too fast at 133 cycles, and it would turn way too slow and be too bulky at 25 cycles. So 60 cycles turned out to be the least light flickering possible for a reasonable motor speed, and it was synchronous to the rotation of the Earth. So that's why Tesla chose 60 cycles a second.
Okay, well, thank you for making sense of that for me, and it even makes me think of a photograph where, you know, some people try to manipulate the image by altering the cycles in which, what do you call, the frames per second. So the eye can only see a certain amount of frames per second, and if the light was above that speed, then we wouldn't see the flicker.
Right.
So, thank you. I've been wanting to know the answer to that for a long time. Because I've had friends that are doing experiments with pulse DC, and they said that, you know, for transformers, 60 cycles is not optimal. That was their opinion. I don't know if there's a better way of doing it, but
it all depends on application, because 400 cycles has also become a standard AC frequency.
Okay.
There were several that it started with for radar use, because you want high power transformers, but you don't want heavy high power transformers. So the higher the frequency, the more effective the reactance of the transformer can be. So the core can become smaller and the wire can become shorter. So you can have extremely powerful transformers that occupy very small spaces and earn a lot of weight to carry up in the air in the aircraft. So 800 cycles, 1,200 cycles, 1,000 cycles, 400 cycles, and then finally it was standardized on 400 cycles. So all aircraft have 400 cycle alternating current electrical systems, if they have alternating current.
Okay.
Small aircraft have usually 24 volts DC.
Oh. Another thing. Thank you. you're just a book of knowledge. You know, I guess I do want to get into more of the stuff you're doing, but most people know that you like to spend your time alone, and I'm assuming you like to do a lot of reading and maybe writing. Is that what you do mostly in your spare time when you're out in the mountains? Well, not in the
mountains.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a lot of hiking around. That's when, I'll study whatever it is I'm working on and take my notes. And pretty much everything that I write is all done outdoors. So
okay.
What the world knows me by has all been written, either on park benches or in the front seat of my car or something like that. It's all been pretty much written outdoors. What I'm working on now is much more difficult, and that is being indoors as long as I have the indoors place to do it.
Okay. So maybe we can get into that. I guess you had a crowdsourcing campaign, and the purpose of that crowdsourcing campaign was to, and correct me if I'm wrong, give you a facility in which you could start doing your experiments again.
Yeah, basically to try to get the place fixed up to the point where at least it could become a basic operating center.
Okay,
so it got to that point where, I can work on my cars here, I can leave materials here or my books or whatever, and write my mathematical papers here, but there's not really a lot more I can do because there's been no money to really, fix the thing up as a laboratory, and I don't have the sources that I used to have for all that stuff. They're all gone. In fact, most of the materials are not even available anymore.
I was actually
so I'm in a difficult situation.
Do you find it difficult now with in regards to electronics that that it's mostly all digital now. There, it's hard to find tubes. Because I noticed in your work that you did, I forget what that guy, Brown, I forget his first name. Basically explaining your system where you're showing scalar waves and how they work.
Well, there's no such thing as scalar waves. So what I was showing was something else. Scalar wave is an absolutely senseless term.
Okay, can you correct that term then, or what it should have been
called? Well, it was probably longitudinal.
Longitudinal, yes, sorry. Yeah. That was the...
Scalar means no wave. So when someone says scalar wave, they define themselves as an idiot.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron. Thank you. I won't use
this has been deliberately introduced by the Tom Bearden disinformation crowd to keep everybody off the track. So the parrots constantly sing scalar wave, and they worship their song. So there's nothing you can do about it. It's entrenched.
You said Tom Bearden disinfo agency? Are you saying that Tom Bearden?
Tom Bearden is a military disinformation officer, and his job was to completely disrupt any possible understanding of Tesla, which was starting to come back into a slow renaissance about that time. So his job was to muck it all up so nobody could understand anything.
Wow. I'm confused because, you know, I started to learn my fundamentals of what free energy was through what him and John Bedini had done.
Well, it won't get you anywhere. It'll just lead you into infinite confusion and flailing.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it at that. So with this facility, you're trying to actually still raise funds for it?
Well, it's... the Gang of Four, as I refer to them, is attempting to take it away from me and screw it all up. So it's kind of become expendable. So what I'm doing right now is, because there's no point in investing any more money in a building that's going to be taken away from me in about 12 months, is I'm going back to the outside plant. So I have a situation going where the government is allowing me to take over abandoned telecommunications lines and either harvest them for the materials or to reconstruct them. So that's what's going on right now. And because I'm building this on government land, they're forcing me to come up with a $10,000 cash bond, and that the main snag I'm facing right now is that.
Why would they want to charge you 10 grand?
Because that's just the way they do business. If I wasn't, you know, connected with the people on the inside, they would charge me $25,000. I'm getting a deal.
Okay.
That's just the way it is, because their philosophy is, you know, if I build something there and then all of a sudden, you know, I go out of business or whatever, like what happened with the cable company that preceded me in one area, they just up and left and... they left all their wires and everything up on the power company poles, and they're all hanging all over the place, and nobody's maintaining them. And so the government is going to, or, you know, in this case, the municipality is going to have to pay to have all those taken down. So that's the reason for the bond. It's understandable.
I guess. It just, if you're going to be doing their work for them, it just...
Well, it's not their work for them. It's my project, or it's, you know, it's the EPD Laboratories project. You know, they will support it within the guidelines that, you know, are available, but they're not, you know, it's not like I'm building this for them or they're just going to provide me with everything for free, but situations develop. So these are all starting points to get it where eventually there will be actual material support from, you know, the governmental side of the deal, but I have a lot of stuff to put together first beforehand.
Okay.
So what I'm doing is the main interest is to reestablish these particular abandoned telephone facilities, which have to begin with a lot of historical value, and then reconstruct the Alexanderson system that I lost at Landers, but build it to a much higher degree of perfection because I have more distance. The right-of-way is for this particular unit here is 1.5 miles. So I have a total of 54 poles to build transmission antenna structures on, and then there's the town will make spaces available to put the terminal equipment. So we don't want to put the stuff here in this building in case we lose it. The whole project will get screwed up. So the municipality here is going to make those spaces available, and then the federal government, you know, is doing everything they can to minimize the filing fees and to make everything available for us, and we're all set to go. The project's been approved. A couple $1,000 in filing fees have been paid. Now I have to put the bond down, and then we go to work.
Okay.
What builds it, because a lot of the materials are available, you know, on other lines that we're removing that are, you know, all dilapidated and they have to be taken down so, you know, they don't become a hazard. Most of the materials are available, so I can pretty much, once the project is started, I can sustain it out of my Social Security income. That's why I focused on that project, because for me it's economically sustainable, and then usually I receive enough donations in the mail to supplement the Social Security to the point where I'm able to, you know, make slow but steady progress.
Okay. What do you plan on transmitting down those lines?
It's not for transmitting, it's for receiving telluric signals out of the earth.
Ah, okay.
So both and also the mechanical, too. I have a very large seismograph pickup configuration in a mine here that's being provided for me. So I'm really, you know, I'm getting something for my $10,000. There's no doubt about it. So facilities are just opening up for me here. So I have the seismograph, a lot of equipment. So basically the plan is as far as the fundraising, as I understand it, because really a lot of it's out of my area. You know, I'm pretty much just out in the woods. Other people are the ones that are helping me with this, is that the $10,000 bond, and it'll cost $15,000 to put up the poles on the section of line that's missing, buy the chart recorders and the racks to put them in, and build the oscilloscopes and all that type of stuff. And then there'll be one basic finished unit that, you know, depending if it goes over that and more money comes in, or we can get advanced funds on this, of course we can move much faster, because then other people can get involved that, you know, that might have to be paid or whatever, because not everybody can live like I do. You know, some people have to get some kind of income, and they don't have, you know, they got to deal with a wife and house and all these financial burdens. So then things, you know, move a lot faster when I got other people to do stuff.
You call the wife a financial burden. Okay, maybe you take it seriously. So you're working, actually, I just want to make sure you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So first of all, 25 grand isn't all that much, considering some of the projects that I've come up with and other friends that I've known. That's a really reasonable thing. But let's get into the seismograph stuff. You know, you're able to detect earthquakes prior to them happening.
Right. If so, they exceed a certain magnitude, which is about 6.
So you can
which is
sense,
which
you
is good.
You can hear the plates moving against each other.
Well, I can do that. But the thing is the actual advanced warning is derived from the electrical impulses that the Earth generates days beforehand.
Okay. So there must be some type of, because of the core materials and stuff, pushing. I don't know if you've tried to theorize why. Actually, how about we go into that? Do you know why?
Well, it's difficult because the nature of the frequencies, it doesn't make any sense that just rocks can make this stuff. The waveforms involved would indicate that the Earth is hollow. So I'm not thinking in terms of any core. I'm thinking in terms of a central sun and a void inside with a backwards ocean facing the inside of the Earth rather than the outside, like the story of Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Okay. Jules Verne.
So then that would make more sense for the waveforms I'm picking up, because the waveforms are way too harmonic to be coming out of some heterogeneous mixture of rock and lava, and it's just not the waveforms are coming from structures, some kind of a boundary condition, like mineral veins. It's not something easy to figure on, but the thing is, I'm taking this from the engineering standpoint, so I don't care where it comes from, just like I don't care what an electron is, and no one can tell me what it is. I know that if a certain amount of them hit the plate of the tube, it's going to get that hot. So all I know is that these signals exist, and they have a way where they come and go, and they all represent different phenomena of the Earth, like hurricanes, tornadoes, volcanoes, all have their own electrical signature, which basically it seems to originate from my research, the interior of the Earth, whatever the interior of the Earth may be, I don't know.
I did want to share, I don't know the guy's name, I wish I did, but there was one guy that actually theorized that it's a single hydrogen atom highly under pressure, and that causes the hydrogen atom to expel transmutated materials. What do you think of that?
I don't have any knowledge on that.
Okay, well, I'll try to find it, and maybe if you're, out relaxing, basking in the sun, you could, we could get that information so you can look into that theory, if you felt like it, which we can discuss at a different time.
Right.
So you've done experiments based on Tesla's work, and you actually were doing it prior to even knowing about Tesla.
Yeah, I managed to come up with his monopolar transformer thing, which is known as the Tesla transformer, on my own when I was in high school, by the material that was provided to me by RCA.
Okay. So you've actually transmitted signals and possibly energy through the ground and received it on another point?
Well, there was a through-to-earth transmission that happened, accidentally. It wasn't planned on, but I was notified by a friend of mine who had lived in a town about 15, 20 miles away on the other side of the small mountain range there, and he called me and he asked me, do you know that you're on the air? And I go, I'm not on the air. I'm experimenting with my transformers. There's nothing hooked in the antenna. But he goes, well, I can hear you loud and clear. So what this thing was doing is it was sending waves out into my ground system, and then he was picking it up through his ground system, and he could hear my signal even though there was no antenna. It was just the transmitter and the Tesla transformer sitting on top of it. And there was no electromagnetic field measurable from this device, even though it would, of course, electrostatically it would light up fluorescent lamps and make big flames and burn insulators up.
Now, is that unhealthy for people to be around?
Well, I don't seem to have any health problems from it. I wouldn't do the things now that I did back then, like connecting, myself to 100-watt light bulbs and lighting them up full brilliance like Uncle Fester on the Addams Family. I wouldn't do that anymore. That's what I used to do.
Okay. All right. So you have confirmed that. I don't know if I had mentioned it to you when we were on the phone, but in the 70s, the Canadian government was under Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, and he worked with an organization called PLACE, PACE, which was called Planetary Association of Clean Energy. And did I mention this to you before?
No, I don't think so.
So they had this multimillionaire get involved. He was from Montreal, Quebec. And this man wanted to fund Tesla's wireless transmission through the ground, and they got approved. They got it done. They built it. Built the tower in a mine in Timmins, Ontario. They did some field tests and found that there was actually a gain rather than a loss with the transmission of the energy. And they had been approved for 5 megawatts from Timmins, Ontario. And when Toronto Hydro, which is the guys that basically run the entire province, found out about this experiment where they were going to transmit to Michigan State University, they shut it down. Have you met similar obstacles where you got close to getting something done where it would be ready to prove on a large scale, where then it just got shut down, where they wouldn't allow you to do it? They stepped in and say, no, that's enough. You're not allowed to do that.
Well, I go through that on a continuous basis. I'm going through that right now with regard to this building.
Okay.
So it's basically the problem is, it's what it is. It's an embedded communist organizations in the United States that seem to be the bulk of my problems. I don't really think it's a good idea to use the Tesla wireless power transmission to send that much electricity through the earth. It just doesn't seem like the right thing to do. Plus, it'll make all kind of interference to my telluric research. So that's not something I'm really willing to engage in. But on the other hand, the Navy needs a better communication system, the submarines, and that doesn't use that much power. It used much less power than what they have now. So what I would do is I would approach it from a communication standpoint and then use that as a means to derive scientific knowledge of what's going on and analyze that and make decisions upon it afterwards. And there wouldn't be any opposition except for the people that don't like the Navy, which would be the enemies of the United States.
Yeah.
So that's basically the route that I'm taking, is I stay on that channel. And then I don't have it. Then I don't have any problems with any government or the corporation things. Well, that's a different deal. You know, the power company's so screwed up now that somebody's going to have to take them on. So I've done a little bit of that. You know, I've managed to trip the 110 kV oil circuit breakers at the Richmond substation on a reverse power relay and shut the city down. The power company actually found it quite exciting once we started talking about it. So, My problems do not come from those organizations. They come from these rogue communist organizations and then this, how would they call them, suppressing agent mentality of, like Borderland Sciences and fraudulent organizations that pretend to be supporting this work, and actually they're just trying to confuse everything and screw people up in the long run.
So the Borderland Science was actually, now that you said that, I had the mental image of the guy's shirt. That was the name of the seminar, not the seminar, but the, you did a tutorial on your work. And you're saying that, you know, where that guy had filmed you, there was actually an ulterior motive behind it, which wasn't a positive one, of sharing information?
Well, the evidence would lead to that being, you know, that these people have reared their head again, and they've created an actual whole website that's basically designed to defame me and disrupt my work. It's called Etherforce. It's basically a rehash of the fraudulent Borderland material, from what I've been told, because I entrusted all my original SkyMets notes, my whole solar terrestrial research project from Sonoma State, rare diagrams of the giant radionic antennas buried out at the RCA station. All this stuff was entrusted with Borderland, and they jettisoned the whole thing. They basically, as far as I understand, they destroyed it.
Sad.
And now they're active again. Well, Tom Brown is anyway, is active again in this disruptive organization to screw up my work. That there's people that reluctantly, if they were forced in court to testify, would be capable of testifying that, he's performed a larceny operation on me, and I've lost about $50,000 in that regard. So that's kind of, these are kind of the things that suppress my work. And then you can't really work in a society that worships death and destruction anyway. You can't do anything functional or someone's going to screw it up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hopeless situation. So, I beat my head against it for decades and decades and decades. Two generations, starting with Van Tassel and some other people and myself, it took 30 years to build this Mojave Research Facility in Landers, and the whole thing was destroyed and could never be replaced. It took me 10 years just to build the telluric receivers. It was all destroyed. Nobody cared. It was a real estate scam. People know, just like the people of this EtherForce thing, they know that, you know, there's no way I can pay a lawyer $250,000 to defend myself against identity theft and websites using my name that I don't authorize, so they just go ahead and do it. I'm easy prey. So that's why I get disability. It's been determined that I really can no longer have, or never have been able to have, a functional relationship with humans, so I get, you know, enough money where I can go live in the bushes and be left alone, because there's no way for me to earn a living or survive.
Yeah, you know, Eric, I don't blame you for that. People can be really harsh and judgmental and do awful, heinous things to each other. And, you know, I definitely consider the same thing myself, just saying screw it and going away. But, you know, it's people like you that you know, unfortunately, you're probably just had it. But, you know, there are other people out there, like, you know, that are creative like you, that come up with these, you know, mind-blowing ways to change society. But if everybody that was a creator like you decided to just stop, screw it, I'm going to go be by myself, we'll never see the change that most of us have been waiting to see most of our lives. And in your case, a lot longer than my life has been. So, you know, I guess I'm just trying to find a way to encourage you to try and keep up with your work. And, you know,
well, the encouragement that I have right now is a very effective encouragement, in that I've signed papers and made agreements with the government that I'm going to work on a project, and if I fail on that, then I am it's like the old days, you know, when there wasn't insurance. If you didn't make something that worked, your head rolled if you made a mistake back in, you know, in the days of 1400, 1500, 16th century realities. So that's enough incentive for me to finish the project I started here. The complication is the people that had brought me here under false pretenses to put me in a place and get me set up and make these commitments have virtually destroyed any ability to do anything here by bleeding me financially and harassing me on the air, you know, which doesn't do any fundraising or anything any good. So it's all operating under an impediment. So basically, you know, before I have coffee in the morning, I just, you know, I feel like the hell with it. I just want to get in my car and just bail and say the hell with everything. But the coffee, you know, gives me the false impression that everything's fine, and then I go out and continue to do what I do. But I am 62 years old, but it's getting really difficult to find anything to work with anymore. The whole society around me looks like something out of a Twilight Zone episode, so it's not getting any better.
No.
So it's not, I can't do the stuff that I used to do when, you know, I was 19 or 20 something years old. I don't have the United States Navy or RCA or the phone company or any of these organizations behind me like I used to have, with their material support, you know, and making facilities available to me. That's all gone. You know, I did all that. Massive quantities of work, and everything was destroyed 10, yeah, 15 times.
Well, what you're experiencing now, Eric, is what 99% of all inventors have to deal with. They get no support. This commercialism mentality of, you know, of people needing to put out their life savings to prove an invention concept, and then they rape them for, you know, most of their assets of the creation. You know, that's never going to help anybody. And you know,
the thing is, my situation's a little different, because I don't regard myself as an inventor. I'm an electrical engineer. But I'm an electrical engineer with enough experience and background that anything, any mathematical equation, any electrical network, any amplifying device or antenna structure that I need in the course of engineering, I can invent.
Okay.
But I don't call myself an inventor. I'm not inventing anything. What I'm doing is I have certain engineering goals that are put before me, like I might have to put, you know, a 500 kVA electrical system in a ship. And then there's going to be complications, because that's usually why people call me, because there's something that's not quite right. And the ordinaries don't know what's going on. There's some kind of thing with the voltage, or they have to adapt an old system to a new system. And then I can invent networks or schemes that make the generating equipment on the ship perform in ways that people hadn't seen before and get the desired result without necessarily having to put in 500 kilowatt generators.
Well, Eric, to me, what that is inventing. Inventors create solutions to problems. Some of them have an ability like Tesla. I have the same ability Tesla did, where I see images. You do a lot of work with math. Do you not see mathematical equations visibly in your head without having to write them?
Well, they're basically just other words. It's just another symbolic expression. So, you know, I've been working on this alternating current thing for well over 8 months now. So all those, you know, relationships, they're in my dreams at night. So
okay,
they just become part of a visual thing. Now, one thing Tesla, it's important to say here, you know, on the nature because of what I already said about inventors, is Tesla also in his statement said he did not consider himself an inventor. He considered himself a discoverer.
Okay.
The inventor usually goes after a specific, you know, point isolated type projects where, you know, an engineer is faced with a situation, and if he's a good engineer, he's got to figure out a way to squirm out from underneath the thing, you know, whatever is thrown upon you financially or impossibilities in design or inadequate equipment or any of the, you know, enemy soldiers or whatever it might be. You have to, you know, be creative enough to overcome those things. But most engineers don't even know Ohm's law anymore, not alone having the ability to invent their way out of a situation, and the positions they're in are not conducive to that. They're basically just computer program mushers that, you know, push buttons on a keyboard and get preformed package results that usually are wrong. So that's kind of, you know, we're talking about things that existed in the past. The world that we exist in now, there really aren't these things anymore, just like the equipment. The people are gone too.
Yeah. Well, in you know, in the terms of the of defining what an inventor is, to me, that's just someone that is very creative, and usually within that creativity, they can come up with solutions simply. So,
right.
You know, I call myself an inventor for that reason. I share a lot of my designs, and you know, so I don't know how half of them will work, but I still saw it and I draw it out and I share it. So a lot of inventors, from what I've seen, usually are one item inventions.
Right.
And so I typically my personal thought on that is that because they sell it out for money, that they lose their connection, creativity.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem. So, you know, it ends up somebody else gets it, and then they do something different with it. And can you hold on for just a second? Hold on,
yeah,
just a second.
No,
hey, John.
Oh, this is a pretty interesting show today. It's going to make me miss
that. Okay, right now, we're tuning up the cosmic induction generator, so I've got to make sure that the guy knows what to do. So I just got him on that.
Okay.
It's hard for him to get all the way over here to work on this. He's only got a certain number of hours, and he's got to leave this afternoon.
Okay. I guess, you know, first thing I want to mention is that you do have a book for sale. Are you selling a book?
Well, there's a couple of them. There's one that's been under a level of suppression for a long time about my relationship with the whole RCA situation there in Bolinas and what I learned historically and the systems that I developed there and the systems been developed by other people. It's called Wireless Giant of the Pacific. Well, that's finally been broken loose. It was tough, but it's finally been broken loose. And then I had to give a presentation not too long ago on the things that I work on, and the public vote wanted me to talk about my mathematical theory of alternating current called the four quadrant theory. So it's not something that a layperson could understand at all. So I was stuck with how to deal with that. So in order to be able to provide a talk that was comprehensible, I had to basically write a book on it first. And that book turned out to be it really hit me to a lot of things and allowed me to advance into, now I've written another book. The volume one has just been finished the other day, and I'm working on volume two now. So basically, the RCA book is out, the four quadrant book is out, and the symmetrical components analysis book is in the process of being prepared for release right now.
Okay, and where can people find your book?
Well, somewhere on the internet. That's yeah, that's how it all works now. I don't know because I don't have any of that. The four quadrant, I think it's called fourquadranttheory.com or something like that, and it'd be Wireless China, the Pacific. I think it's the titles are given internet addresses.
Okay. So maybe that information would be at ericpdallaird.com where people could find those links?
Yeah, it could possibly. The RCA book is not here. The other one, I don't know. Let's see. Hold on a second.
Okay.
I have that here. Stuff keeps shuffling around, but I might have something. Well, here we go. Yeah. 1.9 to 2.4. Okay, so, oh, yeah, I forgot. There's one called the Lone Pine Writings. That was that's my writings when I was living in the wilderness at Lone Pine. So I can give you the internet address to that.
Okay. If you could go ahead.
So that's www, and then Lone Pine Writings in one word, and then .com.
How do you spell L-O-N-E, Pine?
Yeah, Lone, as in single.
Okay.
The other one is www.fourquadranttheory in one word, and then .com.
Okay.
And I believe the RCA book, as I call it, will be wirelessgiantofthepacific.com. So I think with that information, anybody that's good at pecking their keyboard probably can get right to it.
Okay. And in these books, Eric, people will be able to learn. Is there a specific book that is more about the technical stuff that would have been written on the Energetic Forum, which is another place people can go to find Eric's math equations and work that he's done where he shared that freely?
What's happening right now is the Energetic Forum stuff is being distilled and concentrated into a number of books.
Awesome. Okay.
So there should be, as far as I understand, there is a Lone Pine Writings 2 book out. Most of these things are designed to be very basic. They're not, highly theoretical but you're going to have some kind of, intellectual ability to be able to handle it. It's not, just moron level stuff. There's a lot of details involved, but it's basic. It's made to be understandable. By anybody. Anybody can get something out of it.
Okay. So I guess I would, we're almost, we got about 15 minutes left of the show, and then I'm going to let the people ask you questions and learn from you. So I wanted to ask you about some of your successes that you've had with the cosmic induction generator that John Pawlowski is working on?
Yeah, he's here right now working on it.
Okay. What are some of the things that you've had success with on this invention?
Well, it's not an invention. It's a adaptation of application of Tesla's transformers. It's designed to produce an extremely intense dielectric longitudinal field, such as you would find in outer space on a cosmic level. And accordingly, it will produce cosmic formations inside of vacuum tubes when it's put into the field, which is a quite interesting phenomenon. And then it also produces a counterspatial monopolar discharges where the discharges jump from the terminal back to themselves in a golden ratio proportioning, which is a very fascinating thing to look at. And it will also imprint the outlines of, like, plants and trees into dielectric materials, which is, again, a fascinating thing to see. But it's not like a utility device. It's not something to make money out of. It's more of a plasma experimentation There also are some mining applications for separating metals that were not separable by chemical means or electrolytic means to get like gold and silver out of mine tailings and what have you. That is one possible application. It also does a flame speaker thing where you can have a giant electrical discharge that have music at full fidelity come out of it. It's completely striking. Some people refuse to believe it exists and go into a psychological choke experiencing it. It's so intense. So, but this is a very, very, very expensive, lengthy project because you have to build these big radar modulators in the form of high-frequency radio transmitters and large tubes and very high voltages and currents and heavy equipment, and the coils are difficult to make. What I did is I put out the adaptation of those coils to do, because when they're separated from the cosmic induction generator, the coils still want to communicate with each other, and they can be used for telluric radio transmission through the Earth. So there's a group of people on the energetic form that are building those devices right now. And the transformers are the same. There's no difference. It's just a matter of how you configure them.
So people can find instructions of how to build this device, this cosmic generator, induction generator, sorry?
Well, the Tesla transformer. The Tesla transformer is the component in all of these electrostatic alternating current technologies. So once you build the Tesla transformer, then how you apply it is up to you. If you want to use it as an induction generator, or if you want to use it as a radio receiver or a transmitter, is all depends on how you want to apply the device. So on the energetic form, as I developed all the algebraic relationships so that you can calculate the number of turns and the length of wire and the length to height ratio and the frequencies and the impedances, and there's three or four people that are actively working on this. The challenge was to use the device to basically steal a usable quantity of electricity from the local radio station by picking up the telluric currents generated by its ground radials and lighting a 100-watt light bulb, which is theoretically possible. I'm sure the radio station wouldn't like it, but it would be an interesting experiment. And some people did manage, they didn't get to 100 watts, but there were people that proved the Tesla through the ground power transmission by lighting small light bulbs up off the power from the AM transmitter. This project on energetic form is called the Crystal Radio Initiative.
Okay. I guess I'm just reading through some of Aaron's notes here. I guess one thing to mention, that if anybody wanted to throw a few bucks your way, that they can go to Eric P. Dallaird. It has to have the middle name in there, so ericpdallaird.com, and that'll help Eric out with whatever he's trying to accomplish. I'm just going through a whole bunch of stuff here that Eric sent me. I guess what kind of GLOM do you need, and can you define what GLOM is?
GLOM is a maritime term from when I used to work on the bay in San Francisco rebuilding ships. Is the captain that I was closely associated with had his own lingo. Just like, I had my own Bolinas lingo, and we kind of tripped off on that. And he had this term GLOM, and he regarded me as the GLOMmeister because I was the one that could get on these old ships before they got scrapped and get more stuff off in a more efficient and reliable manner than anybody else. So what GLOMing means is, like if you find a transformer or, a box of new light bulbs or something in the dumpster and you get it for free, then you have glommed it.
Okay. Well, what did you need?
So I still have a foot in the surplus business. I'm not working in the surplus business anymore, but I'm still connected to all those people. Some of these people and their operations go all the way back to both of our childhoods. And one person in particular now who's on the board of directors of our organization is very effective at finding GLOM, particularly the Western Electric and Bell Telephone stuff that I need for the telluric project. So that's helping out quite a bit there. The main problem is the cost of moving it all around and places to put the stuff is what we're up against right now. We have, oh, I would say probably four or five tractor trailer loads, you know, one big rig load, four or five of those one big rig loads of Guam right now waiting to be moved.
Okay. So what did you, what are some of the things that you actually do need?
Well, it all depends which project. So for the radio, the high power radio frequency stuff, you know, I need large coils and capacitors, you know, transmitter parts. For my ionospheric research, I need mostly Navy communications equipment, preferably the more modern stuff, which is very expensive and very difficult to find. I don't know if I can ever recover that aspect of my work, not alone the fact that each antenna occupies 5 acres of land and you got to have about four of them. So, you know, these are all complications. The telluric thing, I mainly need old, like, telephone carrier equipment, the older style, you know, like the telephone equipment that used to have the lit push buttons on the phones. I need that stuff for switching the communications lines in and out, repeater coils, patch panels, racks. Racks and equipment cabinets are a big expensive complication that's holding me up, but I think we got some of that located. And then, you know, there's also the car complications too, because my automobiles are like the rest of the stuff, so finding anything from my 1980 Toyota Corolla or finding more 1980 Toyota Corollas or their matching Celicas is also a consideration that I have to deal with. PRC-47 that I use is my tactical radio operation in the car. I've all taken a crap. I'm in desperate need of more PRC-47 radios, transceivers, for our telluric project and testing these coils. I need the Navy TCS-12 transmitter receivers from World War II. They pop up now and again, but this stuff is very expensive, and it doesn't pop up a lot. So, I mean, these are all, you know, if somebody has this stuff or somebody wants to find it and buy it for me, or, you know, I have the Glommeister has the address to receive the stuff and the warehouse space to store it and the vehicles to get it to me when I need it. So I got the reception end of it down. The stuff will be in safekeeping.
Awesome.
We did a bit of a video, the last video that Aaron and I did here, which I think is going to be a basis for the present fundraising we're on. I kind of show pictures of, you know, the scraps and remains that I have here of the good old days and the equipment, and I kind of give a tour of, you know, this is the thing that I need to find, and I'm looking for these, and that way if anybody sees anything that looks like that, even if it's not the same equipment or it's not right or it may be burned out, there's always, like, you know, the parts, the screws, all that type of stuff to build up another hardware inventory in order to, you know, rebuild new equipment from scratch.
Okay. I did want to mention something about your Guam, that the nonprofit EPD Laboratories Incorporated is a 105(c)(3), which means it's a charitable nonprofit and donations are taxable. So send donations of Guam, which can be written off as tax deductions as well as financial donations. So to anybody that may listen to that, you know, that might be a...
Yeah, we have that aspect. So it can be worked out, you know, if you want a tax write-off. I mean, that's kind of beyond, you know, my capability, but there's other people that take care of that. We have an organization set up for that, so that all can take place.
Now, what about magnet wire?
I don't particularly need a lot of that.
Okay. Well, I figured I would ask because I've been collecting lots of Guam from a friend, Foxy Recycle, and he's got a secondhand reselling place where they sell used electronics. And I go in there, and he lets me pretty much take free reign of the place. And I might spend hours picking through core materials and transformers and taking motors so I can take them apart to see how they're all built differently, and so that's why I was asking about that. So, you know, to anybody that's listening that has something on their shelf, you know, send a message to, I guess, the information at ericpdollaire.com. If they just look for their website and say, hey, this is what I got. And I guess the message will get forwarded to the right person and you can find out if Eric needs it. So, you know, we do have a lot of inventors and thinkers that come on the show to listen in and help out and collaborate ideas. So I can easily see one of them, you know, having maybe one of the things you would need, which would be really nice.
Well, there's always, you know, there's the basic stuff, you know, like your standard carbon resistors, tantalum capacitors, you know, tube sockets, vacuum tubes. You know, there's a whole variety of items that, you know, mostly these old ham radio guys used to have that stuff, and they're all dying off. There's not too many left, but that's usually where you find the stuff that I'm looking for, is when one of these old ham radio guys dies, that, you know, got his ham license during World War II, if there's any of them still alive, there's still a few, you know, they usually have piles of this stuff, and then when they die, their wife throws it in the dumpster, or, you know, if you can't go, you can't dig it out of the dump. Like, you know, I used to have a guy, a friend worked at the dump, so we'd just intercept it, but sometimes, you know, you can find out about this stuff before it gets dumped. It's kind of a, you know, hit and miss thing. There used to be like flea markets and stuff years ago. I think that's pretty much all. But, you know, the stuff's floating around. It's out there. It's not like it used to be. You know, you can't get these radio tubes for 50 cents back in 1967 that are now worth $1,000 a piece if you can find them. You know, these are kind of some of the complications.
Okay. I actually have a few old tube power supplies. Would they be of use to you? They do have...
Yeah, that's the stuff I'm thinking, because then I can take those apart and rebuild them in the power supplies that I need for other things, or use them directly.
All right. Well, I'll talk to Aaron and make arrangements about sending them off to you, because I was only going to destroy them to find out how they work, and, you know, maybe...
Oh,
I
no, that
ask...
would be... That wouldn't be good.
Maybe I could ask you for a chat after you get it, and I still have a photographic image of it in my head, and you could just... Maybe I could call you and you could tell me what it did, and then that way I would know. And to me, that would be a fair barter. But I could
send you a diagram.
Okay. So I think I have two, maybe three of them sitting on a shelf collecting dust. So I'm sure they'll make use, be some use to you. And I do also have some large transformers. I like to collect transformers, multi-tap and. But not like, you know, power supply ones that you'd see on a telephone pole.
Yeah, there's so many different types of transformers, it's kind of hard to say what you have.
Yeah, well, then I guess I'll get some pictures over to Aaron, and I'll let you have free reign of my collection.
Okay, well, thank you.
No problem. So I guess we are coming up to that time where we're going to allow people to come in and ask questions. I ask that you put a number beside your name. If you are on the Dark City Radio website, make sure you press mute right away so that way you don't interrupt who's talking. And just go ahead and click that blue button, the blue Skype button. You can also call the international number, which is there. You know, hopefully that's not the method you have to use. I'm going to just see if we have any numbers. Oh, I'm way behind. We got two. We got Warren and Frank. So go ahead, Frank, and Warren's next. Come on in.
All right. Hey, Eric. We have been chatting a lot while you're talking, and it's going crazy. Leon is... right there with you, and I've been posting a lot of your stuff for your books and so forth, so hopefully we can get you more stuff going.
Hello?
Thank you.
Yep, just a quickie.
You're a little low there, Frank. It's sort of hard to hear you.
Had to get closer to my phone.
But yeah, you thank you for posting those links for Eric. Very much appreciated. Frank, did you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Is there any other questions? Do you have a question for Eric?
Well, if there's any questions, it would be essentially, as I'm trying to understand a lot of this, you're picking up all the frequencies of the Earth. So you're essentially creating a generator that will draw from that?
No, it's just it's basically radio receiving. So it picks up a certain percentage of the energy of the signals, but it's not designed to receive all their energy.
Does that answer your question, Frank?
Yeah, that it does.
Okay. So I guess we'll bring in Warren next. Go ahead, Warren.
Hello?
Hi, Warren.
Yeah,
how's it going?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, I was wondering, as far as building a Tesla magnifier system, would AC or pulse DC be best?
Well, it all depends what you're trying to do, but they're basically, they're radio frequency devices, so you're going to be using a radio frequency.
And are there specific frequencies that resonate with Earth best?
You wouldn't be able to build something that big.
The best way to
start it off is to start it off small and use it as a radio communications mode to experiment with. It means you have to get a ham radio license, and then learn from that. And then each time you scale up and go down in frequency, you'll have to get a license from the FCC or whatever the radio regulatory agency is in whatever country you're in, because you're transmitting.
Well, I got a coil that I can get between 8 kilohertz and 50 kilohertz. Is that a range that's possible with harmonious vibration with Earth?
Well, if you have a coil that resonates, but if it's small, the impedance is going to be so high, it won't be able to interact with the ground plane.
Okay, so it's got to be a high resistance as well.
Well, you have to remember, you know, that Nikola Tesla's Colorado Springs unit operated around 50 kilocycles, and the coil was 50 feet in diameter or something like that. So unfortunately, if you're going to engage in any telluric transmissions at those frequencies, you have to have the proportional devices. That's why we're doing all this up on the above the broadcast band, on what's called the 160-meter amateur radio band. And then at some point, I will apply to the FCC for the licenses to do it below the broadcast band. Because initially, I developed this for RCA as a maritime communication system. And those frequencies are not necessarily being used a lot for that anymore, even though I want to get that operation going again. It doesn't look like there'll be a commercial deal coming right off, so I'm going for an experimental license down on those bands, which shouldn't be a problem. And I have AM broadcast transmitter that I can detune down, and the transformers will be quite large. They'll be, you know, like 4 or 5 feet in diameter and probably about 3 feet long, and the voltage will be extremely intense on them. They have to be in a special room so they don't start any fires.
So I had another question. The whole resonance thing. So if you were able to put, if you could light a light bulb up with a 9-volt battery and it was 1 9-volt light, would you be able to light more lights up if you put the 9 volts into the earth with resonance and then have a bunch of receivers?
No, that all gets changed every time it goes through a transformer. So basically, you know, the transformer steps it up or steps it down to the resonance circuit. So any voltage is possible for the load. The load that goes into the earth will depend upon the impedance of the earth, which you have to determine experimentally, which is not easy to do because you have to build the transformer and then, you know, the RF amp meters and all the things to figure out what the impedance is. It will defy all circuit principles because the Tesla monopolar system is not a boundary condition electromagnetic reality, so there is no circuit. It's a difficult situation to actually figure out what the impedance of the Earth is to these waves. It takes a lot of experimentation.
Okay.
And the ground system the ground system has to be massive. That's the problem. The ground system has to be massive. Tesla pointed out that the connection to the Earth was the hardest part of the whole project.
And that's best through like an iron pipe that's part of your water system?
Yeah, most of that stuff goes to transite or plastic or something. So the standard ground system used for this stuff is what an AM broadcast station would have. This is 120 wires. They don't have to be buried too deep in the ground. In fact, they could even be above the surface for capacitive coupling. But usually they're 6 inches to 18 inches in the ground. There's 120 of them, 300 feet long.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the Ponzi device with the telluric currents? I've seen some stuff, some replicators from Russia that are claiming to be able to turn telluric currents into power for their houses. Is that actually possible?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I haven't, no one's told me about that before, and I don't really, you know, being kind of isolated, I don't really see a lot of things either, so what people are doing.
Warren, if you're able to maybe after the show give me the information for that so I can forward it to Aaron, so if, again, if Eric wants to, in his time off, read about it, you know.
Well, the thing is, the situation is, I have a place that I operate out of called Lone Pine, California, and if you send Eric Dollard, General Delivery, Lone Pine, California, 93545, if they're not too insane and they're reasonable, I answer every letter that's sent to me.
Cool, awesome.
That's the best way to communicate with me.
All right.
Well, so there's three or four people right now that, you know, that I'm sequentially guiding through step by step, building a lot of things. You know, people, you know, sometimes ask me all these weird questions or whatever. You know, it's interesting. I try to answer people's questions or, you know, communicate with them what they're into, or it's actually, I find it quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I was able to, your Facebook page, the Eric Dollard cover photo where you're using a pancake coil and then you light up another light in between the two coils.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was able to replicate that same experiment with vortex coils, like the Rodin stuff, but I've just been trying to apply Tesla's, I guess, theories of resonance to basically a vortex fractal coil.
But yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'll write you a cool letter with some pictures.
Okay. Yeah, that would help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to me.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Warren, for asking those interesting questions. We have Lee next that wanted to ask a question. So I actually, hold on a second, Lee. And as an answer to Warren for some of the research that I've done, typically I've noticed a lot of people like the Kapanazi, where they actually throw something in the ground that would, it is a grounding mechanism, but at the same time, they usually throw a potential difference material in, which you can make earth batteries out of galvanized steel, or you can also use aluminum, and also copper, and that creates energy, but to harness those currents, you know, it would, I guess you would need to tune into resonance to be able to pull more energy than just what those potential different alloys. Do you know anything about that, Eric?
Not really. I know Jerry Vassilatos did a lot of digging around in the archives to come up with material on that. We produced his Vril Compendium, which is a wealth of information on telluric currents and natural phenomena and radio transmitters and ideas that, you know, got lost in history. He used to use carbon rods to do his sensing. Unfortunately, he doesn't make references. He copies stuff and doesn't tell you where it came from, but he was doing a lot of experiments, and I think that what we're talking about here is this what's called the Stubblefield Earth Battery.
Okay. I don't know about the actual name. I've conducted those experiments, and typically the size of it didn't matter based on voltage. It was all between 0.8 and 1 volt per cell. So you'd have to multiply.
Yeah, that's not really, there's not really much recoverable electricity there by that mechanism.
No.
But the Stubblefield batteries were composites, multi-plate, or I don't know exactly, but from what you're looking for, that's where to start looking. If there's enough material to do anything with, I don't know. That's been kind of out of my area. I just can't fool around with everything. So,
Lee, are you still there?
Yeah, still here, Matt. Yeah, hi, Eric. I just got a couple of questions, if you may. It's a bit off subject, or maybe on subject. I've been looking into the Tesla hairpin circuit. Is that the dielectric that we're talking about? Because that's baffling me at the moment. It's really strange. Can you shed any light on what's happening there?
Okay, I can't really. I only got like about two words out of that. It's hard for me to understand.
I'm sorry.
Somebody translate for me? Repeat what he said?
He broke up for me too. Lee, would you be able to repeat that again?
It's just the Tesla hairpin circuit.
I know what you're talking. That's his primary coil.
Yeah,
that's what he produced a lot of his radiant impulses with, was that particular circuit.
Yeah, in a sense that with even so with a shunted isolated part of the circuit, really, if you think about the capacitors isolating away that end of the circuit, you're still getting light bulbs lit and things. Can you shed any light on what's happening on that side of the circuit that's apparently isolated from the power source?
Well, it's an oscillation that starts off with a real sharp transient because the loop short circuits the capacitor. But magnetism can't move that fast, so it creates a magnetic shock wave, and that begins to develop some back EMF, and then eventually the thing floods with magnetism, and it can't hold it, and it throws it back into the capacitor, so it will oscillate 15 or 20 cycles, starting with a really sharp beginning, so it's like hitting a bell with a hammer. It produces that kind of waveform, and those were the impulses that Tesla was experimenting with, was the very sharp oscillatory and aperiodic transients. That was some of the beginning of his research into the capacitor discharge, which can produce extremely high energy pulses.
Yeah, but is this what the dielectric that you were talking about before, though?
Well, the dielectric is in the capacitor.
I can't remember the term that he used. Is it dielectricity? I can't remember. He used a term that was electricity on the other side of the capacitor. I don't know. I'm just doing.
Yeah, I can't quite understand what you're saying, but
you said something about the dielectric on the other side of the capacitor.
No,
that's not really. That's basically where the magnetism lives. It's not really, there is a dielectric effect in it. The whole capacitor voltage appears across the thing and has to have an EMF that matches it, but that is more of the magnetic end of the deal. It's not the dielectric end is inside the capacitor.
Okay, yeah.
So what's happening is the dielectric energy is being rapidly reconverted into magnetic energy in the process of a giant oscillatory current transient of several thousand amps. So that sharp wavefront produces a magnetic shock wave. That's what Tesla was experimenting with. It produces a magnetic shock wave, and it causes the actual expulsion of material particles from tubes and possibly the circuit itself.
Okay, yeah, cool, thanks. And the second point I wanted to ask you about is I saw a video of yours a while back talking about frequencies, and you touched on Bach, the composer, and organ work that you went to a concert with organs. Or can you explain a little bit about anything on that kind of frequency levels that you?
Well, those are complex musical chords, so it's basically the relationships between the frequencies rather than the frequencies themselves. The organ is an analog computer to synthesize waveforms, and it can make extremely sharp transients by all the pipes being properly selected to have the phases and the harmonics to produce transients and a lot of interesting waveforms. The music of Bach is its own subject, which is quite involved. But basically, that's where I derive a lot of my mathematical understanding of polyphase power systems is out of the music of Bach.
Yeah, cool. It's just that, again, when the video I watched where you explained it, you talked about how you actually literally felt it in your body, that it was there, something special happened on a frequency level. And is it?
Yeah, those were the transients that I was talking about. You can feel them pass through your body. They're very small but intense high pressure or low pressure zones that move around in space, and they move through your body, kind of like your body is a dielectric, except in this case it's the sound and not electricity, and you can feel these things moving around inside of you.
Yeah, it's a strange, because I've seen a similar report come from a completely different angle, where people are going to these large dance halls and raves and partying away all night, and they're all dancing away, and they're experiencing that same feeling of frequency modulation. I don't know if they've touched on something there or a path's crossed. It's just something that rang a bell with me that I've seen and experienced and heard you explain the same thing in a different way, you know, but with different source of the frequencies. But thanks for your time, and yeah, thanks for joining us on Dark City Radio. You've been a great guest.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah, I was wondering what the point of this second spark gap on the magnifying transmitter to the large capacitance that's also connected to ground.
I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
The only
spark gaps are in the oscillator normally.
Well, there's like a plasma ball from the top of the secondary to the large capacitance on top of it. There's a short gap. Supposedly that was maybe for plasma to generate and charge the top.
Well, Tesla was experimenting with that. I don't know exactly. He was seemed to be hard pressed to try to get the thing to transmit somehow, and he was doing a lot of fooling around. And there was a situation where it would have spark gap coupling from the, and it wasn't the secondary, it was the extra coil to the mast. But I think that was mainly for measurement purposes or experimenting, and in the actual operation, that wasn't the case.
Okay.
But I'm not certain about that. You'd have to go back to the Colorado Springs notebook.
Yeah,
but in general, the mast is supposed to be directly connected to the extra coil. That's how the system was designed to operate, as far as I can tell.
Okay, cool. Would that actually produce a longitudinal wave in the Earth's crust by doing that?
Yeah, that was the purpose, was to produce a telluric current into the Earth with that transformer. The mast is just there as a terminal capacitance. This was never intended to radiate anything. That's a modern misinterpretation.
By making the telluric currents, you could create nodes on the Earth's surface, and then you could pull energy from those nodes? Was that the point of it?
Yeah, that's exactly what he was trying to do. He was trying to get a standing wave node at the point at which the transmitter connected to the Earth, which means that the two systems have to be in an independent synchronous oscillation. Yeah, it's not easy to adjust that, and it gets very difficult because the projections of the wave make it like a shadow when the sun's going down. It's a very small movement in the angle of the sun can cause a big shift in the shadow. So it's finding that nodal point was one of Tesla's biggest efforts, was to get it where there would actually be a point of zero EMF where the neutral lead of the transformer connected to the ground system, which was pretty inadequate there in Colorado. So he was having a lot of difficulties with that.
And so the frequency that's used in the system would basically change the distance of the nodes on the Earth?
So that varies with frequency.
Okay, cool.
So if there's a frequency that the Earth is in a full-wave resonance or two-wave resonance or half-wave resonance, and those produce peaks and nodes, and then he positioned his transmitter in one of the nodal points, and then you'll get peaks and other nodes, and then if you have another transmitter device, or, you know, in that case would be the receiving transformer, then you should be able to communicate energy from one to the other. The frequencies involved would be around 10 to 30 kilocycle range in the end run.
10 to 30 kilocycles, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome, thanks a lot.
Warren, you asked a great question, thank you. I'd have to say, Eric, would you say that Tesla had more than one purpose besides communications with his tower and transmitting energy and communications, that tower was possibly intended to absorb and then distribute a source of free energy?
That's hard to say. So Tesla, you know, the project was intended to be a telluric communication system between the continent and England over to the United States, and Tesla got too much wrapped into experimenting and fooling around, and there just is too many missing pieces in the puzzle, so no one will ever know what Tesla exactly in his mind had planned to do there, that he kept from Morgan, and he reneged on his deal to Morgan, and that didn't help anything either, so it's one big giant enigma.
Yeah.
Well, one thing of interest is there was an interval there where the facility, what's left of it, had been acquired by a historical society, so the natural thing to do was to build a scale model that worked and actually license it with the FCC and use it for maritime communications, but of course, you're not allowed to build anything that works, so that whole thing was just laughed off, and the place will just be useless forever. So Tesla's Wardenclyffe site is now in its final phases of death.
You do know that that Tesla had actually rebuilt on Long Island, New York, do you not?
Yeah.
And people.
I was there. I actually saw the building
when it was up. Like not like the building is still there, but you saw.
Yeah, the building. No, I wasn't alive then, but I went to New York, and people brought me over, and I actually saw the build what was left of the building. Now, the value there is the underground antenna is still there that makes telluric contact with the Earth. That's what makes that place particularly valuable, but they won't let you touch it.
Well, apparently it's been bought by some Tesla foundation of some sort. So
these Tesla foundations are usually the last people you want to talk to when it comes to dealing with Tesla. I can tell you that from hardcore experience. So anything that's got the name Tesla on it is not Tesla. You can pretty much gamble on that. That's a sure bet. If it's all these Tesla societies have basically anything that I've put out, they've done everything they can to suppress it, particularly the San Francisco Tesla Society. I performed a number of very detailed lectures there on this subject, and they're all blocked from public viewing. I can't even get copies of them. They took months, if not years, to put together. So that's where the Tesla. I wrote a whole series on the energetic form about that on Wardenclyffe, and somebody is compiling the series into one complete presentation. So my whole position and understanding and possibilities with Wardenclyffe are all there on the energetic form.
All right. Well, people can.
But someone's going to have to. You know, someone has to know how to maneuver around and pick the little pieces out. You know, because something was written on one thread one month, and then something was written on another thread another month. So, I asked somebody that is a regular on the energetic forum who writes me for advice on how to build certain amplifiers for his his coils, and he said he would put all that together and get it in one package, so that most probably will be there. So the whole thing about what suppresses these projects and the complications and why things of this nature are not allowed to happen are very carefully detailed in that. It's much more than I can get into just off the top of my head right now.
Okay. We did have another question from Frank. Did you want to go ahead, Frank?
I was looking through all your stuff on YouTube, and one thing struck me, and I was just wondering, what do you think HARP is?
HARP is a experimental radio transmission reception device designed to interact with the ionosphere.
Okay, well, why would they do that? What would be the purpose?
Well, it appears to be, from what Jerry Vassilatos surmises from the information available, that they're trying to get an energy resonance going between the antenna structure and the ionosphere to actually be able to draw power from it.
So you don't know.
So a modern Tesla version.
No, it has nothing to do with Tesla at all, whatsoever.
HARP isn't
Tesla. Well, it's all electromagnetic waves, and it involves the ionosphere. So anyone that says that it's Tesla's work, all the stuff about mind control and the rest of it's all, you know, those are just money-making schemes and disinformation to keep you confused about what the thing really does. Because the thing about secret projects is you don't know what secret projects do, so there's no point in theorizing about it, because one of the things you do when you're running a secret project is you deliberately put out false information about it being something that it's not, work it into conspiracy theory, and get all the parrots to sing about it, and it's the exact opposite of what you're doing. That's just standard way of doing business.
Sounds like the stock market. So you're saying, Eric, that where like a lot of people believe that HARP was one of Tesla's ideas in one of his papers that the FBI confiscated or whatever they were, the U.S. government, when Tesla died, you strongly believe that that was not one of the papers that they uncovered from Tesla?
Well, that would not be consistent with Tesla's repeated statements on these matters. Tesla would scoff at the whole idea.
All right. Well, I guess that's that. Frank, did he answer your question?
Right here. Definitely.
Now, one thing I'd like to point out when you brought this HARP up, one observation is, because I'm on the air all the time on the HF, tuning around and listening, is HARP only comes on during periods of high solar activity, when there's an ionosphere to work with of proper density, and solar activity has been at record low levels, almost looks like we're going to go into another dark ages over this thing. Did come back recently with a good surge, and HARP came on. But there's something going on in China that more resembles the woodpecker. And it's on all the time. And it's extremely powerful, and it's as Chinese have no regard for international law as far as whose frequencies they land on. They jam out large portions of the ham radio band. They get it even into the maritime frequencies and aviation frequencies. I'd really like to know what this Chinese woodpecker signal is, and what amazes me is that the silence on the matter, that there's no grand conspiracy theory cooked up about mind control or, you know, any of this type of stuff, when it's a perfect seed for it. So maybe this is something somebody should look into. It's quite a powerful interference, and I would rate it as another woodpecker, which basically the HARP was supposed to be a takeoff of that, but the Russian woodpecker was the same thing as the Chinese. It was all over, and it was powerful, and it was continuous, where HARP is experimental.
So you don't think that there's a possibility that HARP can sort of use a specific frequency to charge, then reflect off of the ionosphere to then force a, like, this is what the theory is going on about HARP, that it can actually cause earthquakes like Fukushima and
that's a complete absurdity. The thing wasn't even on the air then. Yeah, it wasn't even on the air then.
Okay, I asked you because I knew you had picked up those seismic activities. So
Yeah, the Fukushima earthquake was a regular event. All the electrical activity of it, I picked it all up at my research station. The thing started blazing out enough RF that the telluric earthquake signals don't propagate more than 150 miles. But they can be intense enough to refract through the surface of the Earth and reflect off the ionosphere as noise storms. And that's how you can make a determination that these things are coming from greater distances. Those type of signals very closely resemble hurricanes, so usually they're disregarded as extraneous, and they're not used for my purposes for any local seismic prediction. But nevertheless, there was this massive electrical event, and if there were telluric receivers such as the ones that I build over there in Japan, the input voltages coming off the transmission lines going into the receiver structure would be enough that it would probably burn out the input devices. They weren't vacuum tubes. You have to use vacuum tubes. The transistor should be burned right out. But they didn't have anything like that there, and nobody thinks about that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, my station was rapidly being taken away from me, and all my material on that was lost, but at least I have in my mind the memory of what happened. So these are not like man-made events or any of this type of stuff. Those type of stories are absurdities. This was a natural event that had the precursor earthquakes, the electrical signals. There was nothing unusual coming out of the Navy transmitters. There was nothing unusual coming out of HAARP. I have the complete electromagnetic spectrum, electrostatic spectrum, everything analyzed at this facility with acres and acres of antennas and racks filled with spectrum analyzers and wideband receiving equipment. Nothing out of the ordinary was going on to establish an earthquake like that, or I would have known about it.
Okay. Now, Eric, with this device that you're working with, cosmic induction generator. Are you able to actually detect, like, does your seismic, the stuff that you're doing with earthquakes, does it actually need to be in every city, every town, all across the planet? Or can you actually focus in on where an earthquake is going to happen based on the position of it and have, like, a rough calculation of where this event may occur prior to it occurring?
Yeah, that can be done with multiple stations, and then you measure the phase angle to receive signal, and that will point to where it's coming from.
Okay, so like triangulating.
Yeah, like radio triangulation. Because the signals don't seem to make it more than a couple hundred miles, that's fortunate, because then, you know, you're not being dealt with a barrage of signals from all over the world. So when something starts to get received, you know it's in your neighborhood, and if you have a multiplicity of stations, which was the way I was originally approaching this, the Flanders station was the first engineered station, Bell telephone, Navy standards all the way through, no clip leads, no experiments, everything was all, you know, solid, bolted to the floor. You couldn't tell if I put it up or the phone company put it up. That was done. Then the next step was to build one more in Owens Valley, and then I would have a stereo methodology of determining where the earthquake was going to be in San Francisco or Los Angeles, or, you know, similar. I would have that kind of directivity.
We have 4 minutes till the last show. Oh, we got Leon. Leon wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you more about the signal coming from, you said it was China, the ham radios?
Right. A good place to hear that signal is at before sunrise, between about 7.05 megacycles to down to about 6.7 megacycles. So right between 6.8 and 7 megacycles is usually one of the places they operate on. But that was, I don't have the big receiving analysis anymore, so basically I only know what is interfering with me on the PRC-47 in the morning. They have moved down. They're very close to WWV on 5 megacycles now, and they're starting to cause interference on WWV in 5 megacycles. So the last place I heard this thing operating was about 50 to 250 kilocycles above 5 megacycles. They tend to move around in frequency, and they're a composite AM-FM pulse broadcast. The modulation is very unusual, and it's roughly 50 kilocycles wide. The effective
you said
rate
there was a silence
to be in the order of maybe 10 to 20 megawatts.
You said there was a silence between transmissions?
I didn't get that.
You said there was a silence between transmissions, too?
Well, it tends to move around and come and go. It's kind of like the harp does. The harp, you know, well...
So oscillating
the harp
over...
The harp is FM.
Yeah.
So the harp is FM. Sweep rate is variable. It could be slow. It could be fast. They move around. They hunt. I don't know what they're hunting for. They're looking for a good resonant frequency, or they hunt. This China thing just blazes and blazes and blazes and blazes and blazes.
Strange.
And then,
yeah,
then the next day it might be a little this way or a little that way. But it's more consistent than harp.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that info. I'm going to look into this because I'm a ham radio freak too, probably like yourself. So back to you, Matt. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you for asking that and answering that, Eric. We have probably about a minute to go. But just to let everybody know, this is my last show. I may come back. Leon might be taking over for a while. We haven't determined whether that's happening yet or not. It was awesome to do this show. Got to talk to awesome, amazing people. We still have the website. We will still be holding contests. We will, you know, we'll still keep that going, you know, offer a place for inventors to go and put their work for open source work. I thank you, Eric, for coming on my last show. Very appreciated. Shared awesome information. Take care, everyone. Love you all. Might come back and talk to you again soon. That was Inventing a Free World. Take care. Bye-bye.